to the Freaking Awesome Podcast. It is Tuesday, January 22nd, 2019. I'm Benjamin Abaya, and joining me today is my most unbreakable twin brother, John Abaya.
Plot twist, I'm not unbreakable. I get injured a lot. Yeah. Some of them are from you when we were kids.
So do you say that you get split?
Or yeah, sometimes.
Are we split, like, egg-wise? Like,
No. Oh, no, yeah, we are fraternal. So fraternal... No. Fraternal twins are...
Born in different eggs.
Yes, and then identical are on the same egg.
So they're split.
They got split, yeah.
Split.
Yes, yes.
But we're not made of
glass. No, we're not made of glass.
Okay.
We're made out of water, 70%, and something else.
Cool. Anyway, how are you, John? I heard that you recorded a new episode of your date night podcast.
Oh, we're doing plugs right
now. No.
But yeah, we record some. Check them out tomorrow if you want.
Is it going to be out tomorrow?
Yeah, Wednesday.
Okay,
Wednesday,
cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you're new to the podcast, we usually discuss and give our impressions of what we watched, listened, played, or read throughout the week. And we conclude this episode with a main discussion. This week's main discussion is M. Night Shyamalan's Glass, which concludes the 177 Train trilogy.
I did not know that. I didn't even know it was called that until people started saying it. And it makes sense because all the people are connected to that train.
It's kind of a spoiler, too.
Yes,
if you never watch...
No, but at the same time, if you never watch all three, if you only watch Unbreakable, you don't remember that train. I don't remember that train.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, yeah, before all that, though, we're going to have a trailer talk. So this week we actually have this one trailer that everyone's anticipating for. This week's trailer talk is Spider-Man Far From Home.
You don't want any part of this.
He's like Iron Man and Thor rolled into one.
He's no Spider-Man.
What is it with you and Spider-Man?
What, he looks out for the neighborhood, has a dope suit, and I really respect him. Sup, dickwad?
That was a clip from Spider-Man Far From Home, directed by John Watts, once again, starring Tom Holland, Samuel Jackson, Zendaya, Marissa Tomei, and Jake Gyllenhaal. As Mysterio.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a surprise. I mean, he did announce it a month ago, but I was really surprised like he will make his appearance on the trailer immediately. This is the plot synopsis from IMDb. Peter Parker goes on a school trip to Europe with his friends. While abroad, he is recruited by Nick Fury to team up with Mysterio to battle the Elementals. I have no idea about this type of the story when it comes to the Peter Parker lore. So you have to fill me in when it comes to like the Elementals and what is Mysterio when it comes... I know him from the cartoons, John. But anyway, you're a fan. I'm assuming you're a fan of Spider-Man.
Yes, I am a fan of Spider-Man, you may know.
I did not know that, actually, that you were a fan. I'm assuming you like Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. So... Watching this trailer, what's your reaction to it? Knowing that I didn't know this, that you're a Spider-Man fan and that you're, a big Spider-Man fan, apparently.
I really like the trailer. It is a cool way to show how a average boy that has the Spider-Man powers does his, you know, everyday life. I like that going abroad and going to Europe. It has that kind of like cool... like almost like National Lampoon's type of twist where, oh, we're going to take it somewhere else. So
I mean, more like road trip.
Road trip, yeah, yes, yeah, road trip. Like
or Europe,
well, those 80s,
trip.
Like, so like...
No, that happened in the early 90s.
No, but I'm saying, early 90s, yeah. But it's that evolution of a teen comedy.
Yeah.
Like, the first one was about him growing up in high... Or not growing up, but in high school with his friends, you get all these people. Next one is him abroad. Yeah.
So the third one will be a teen sex comedy?
No, no, no. I think it's going to be... Sure? I've seen this before. I don't want to take credit, but the best one I've seen is Spider-Man Home for the Holidays. That's the best one.
Oh,
I
can. That would be nice.
That'll be kind of cool, right?
And it'll probably be directed by...
Shane Black?
Yeah, Shane Black.
Again. Yeah. Shows Iron Man again, probably. But yeah, I really like this trailer. I liked when they showed Mysterio, and I like how they actually hint that he is like a good guy in here. Well... Nick Fury doesn't say his name, like, oh, you're working Mysterio, but he does stop this. I don't know. You said elementals.
Yeah.
So when I first watched it, I thought it was Sandman and Hydro Man.
It is Hydro Man. It was like, confirmed by the director. Yeah.
Okay.
That's their
version,
I'm assuming the elementals are actually different, but they're just going to squeeze Hydro Man inside there.
So are we sure that's Sandman they showed?
No, that's not Sandman. Okay. I don't think
because
so.
I think. People don't really care about Hydro Man. Almost a C-list or almost D-list bad guy for me of Spider-Man. Like, he doesn't get any play in video games or not. So that, I don't really care about that. But I like they show Mysterio and they actually show the fishbowl head that he had. It's big, huge. It's not like a weird, like, cinematic, like, Tony Stark, just one little... ball, like it's actually a huge.
His entire costume in the film is really good.
Yeah. So
or what they showed.
So they mentioned the ending of what's his name, Flash Thompson says like, Flash Thompson. One of the students said, oh, he's like a mixture of Iron Man, Thor, and better like that. So I hope Mysterio is looks like a superhero. I hope his inspiration of that suit is Iron Man and Thor. Like he wanted to be a hero. So he had a cape like Thor and have this cool...
Does he have powers? How is he getting these powers?
In the comic book, he's like a special effects person. Like he loves special effects and he tricks Spider-Man always with just effects. Like he makes things look real.
So he's like a magician almost.
Yeah, almost a magician. Yeah, a failed magician, you could say. But in here, it makes it seem like he is a hero that has an actual suit that does all this stuff. So, I mean, plot twist... Similar to what Vulture did with Mike, or what Michael Keaton did with the Vulture. I don't know if they're going to do a plot twist and like the reveal, like, oh, he is actually a bad guy. And it sucks because everyone knows Mysterio is a bad guy, so I wish there's more to it.
They might be. What if there is a more to it, like a
like
bad guy we don't
she's,
see?
He's the father of Zendaya, Mary Jane.
Or someone else.
They better not
you
do
know what's
that.
Weird is that in the plot synopsis, it says Mysterio to battle the elementals, but on Wikipedia, when they describe the character Mysterio, like Jake Gyllenhaal as Quentin Beck, it literally says an expert on the elementals.
What?
Like he's like the expert.
Oh, he's the one who controls
elementals. Yeah, so it just kind of revealed like he's the one that's doing all this chaos.
I mean, it looks like that. I don't know if anyone who isn't a Spider-Man fan will be like, oh, who's this new superhero, Mysterio, like that, battling these things. Maybe you'll be surprised, but more like fans of like the source material will... right away jump on that right away. It's like there has to be more to the story than what we're
than
looking
what we
at
have. Yeah. Was there anything else you liked about the
I like how MJ is still MJ. They didn't change her, like she's still, they're using MJ now. I hope in the movie we hear the
and
word
it looks
tiger.
Like she's gonna be a theatrical actor.
Yeah, yes, yes. There's a scene where there looked like in the play. Thing. So it's kind of cool they're actually going towards that route where she wants to be a playwright or that playwright.
That'd be kind of cool
actor.
If it's something other than acting. Like, what if she does become like a playwright or
different,
like something a different.
But I feel like her character is more than that. Like, she has to be more than that.
That's why I think a playwright fits her character in this universe because she seems like a more of like an intellect.
I do not want her to be like, oh, I want to be a model for a shampoo or that.
I think she's against that. Yeah. Like, her whole. So the other thing I was going to ask you, but it seems like they explain on Wikipedia, these events take place after Avengers.
Yes. So, that's even confirmed. I forgot who on Twitter said it takes place after Infinity War or
but we just don't know Endgame. What timeline.
Yeah, we don't know which timeline.
Which universe, if it's our universe or not.
There's a hint. I think the writers of the movie, of this movie, also wrote Ant-Man and the Wasp. So... I don't know if there's a hint of the style of the way they tell stories or maybe a little time travel again.
my thoughts, I really enjoyed the trailer. I think it's going to be one of those moments in this year that would be big for, especially this character that's just getting bigger and bigger, it seems like, ever since its renaissance, or not renaissance, but reintroduction to
Spider-Man again.
Yeah.
And will we put him on the top 19 list again?
I just want to give a shout out, because I'm a huge fan of him, is Michael Giacchino. His rendition of the television show, Spider-Man television theme song is really good. And they're actually using it. I mean, they did use it in the first one.
But it's only in the beginning when they showed the Sony and Marvel logo.
Yeah. Well, actually, it came after that. Do you not remember how the beginning? Because I rewatched it over the weekend, and they showed, like, you know, Sony production and
a Peter Parker film.
It shows Peter Parker. And then after all those events, then when he talked to Tony Stark, then it goes
the flipping,
and then
the
it pages. Does the Marvel.
Oh, okay. I didn't even realize
that. And it's a mixture of like the.
But this one seems different. This seems more orchestra. That word. Huh? More like boom, like a
orchestrated.
Orchestrated. Theme song than the last one. Yeah. And I like how they show it in the very ending. It's a theme song that, like, Batman and Superman has theirs, and I love that Spider-Man has theirs. I wish other Marvel characters do, because they don't. Like, they Avengers kinda, do.
Yeah.
But hum me the Captain America theme song.
It goes, Captain America, Captain America. Uh-huh.
It's gonna be Thor's.
American. Oh, Thor, the
God.
The Thor, the God. He's the God.
Okay, yeah. Similar.
Iron Man.
That one works for
them. He's made of iron. Iron Man.
I don't want to hear Ant-Man's one.
Ant-Man. Okay. So, yeah, I'm really excited. It's coming out, I think, right after...
4th of July.
Yeah, 4th of July. Yeah. So, it's after... So, it goes this year alone. It goes Captain Marvel, The Avengers Endgame, and then Spider-Man Coming From Home. Wait, no, Far From Home.
Yeah.
Is there other Marvel films coming out?
I mean, there is unannounced ones, probably, that we don't know about. Like, secretly, there's an X-Men film or something like that. But other than that...
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's another one.
But they're really heavily focusing on the first half of this year, it seems like. Like, after July, there's nothing, right?
Yeah, for Marvel, nothing, yeah.
And DC is in between there too. It's only Shazam. I don't know how to say that word. And what else?
Shazam.
But there's another one, right? I don't know. But yeah.
I'm looking now. Yeah, it's... I mean, it says the other projects that may come out this year is sometime November 6th.
Okay.
But it's unannounced yet. But they do have something there at November 6th. So they, it could be a, well, it could be an X-Men film. Yeah. I was thinking about like
no, that. But Dark Phoenix is opening soon too. So.
That's true, but I heard it's not that great.
Fantastic Four? They should have been filming that way before.
Anyway, so that is it for the trailer talk. John, you also did something. You played something this week.
Yes, we actually played something, and you can actually watch that on YouTube right now. Go to our channel, type in The Freaking Awesome, and search for us, subscribe to it right now, and you can actually watch our playthrough with my wife, in which we played Resident Evil 2, the one-shot demo. So we played this on Xbox One.
I played some of it on PS4.
So you did play some of it. So many times I played Resident Evil 2, but I never finished it. You can't go back to that game. The original one is hard to go back. Then the remake one they did on GameCube. It came out, and I played some of it, but I didn't play, like, a lot. I only played probably, like, a good 30 minutes, and I was like, I don't like this controls. I'm done with these type of games where the fixed camera and the tank controls. So when they announced that this one will get another remake, a third remake, they love making remakes, Capcom, I tried it out, and I really love it. It's one of my, last year, or a couple of years ago, Resident Evil 7 was one of my favorite games of that year. This one is probably one of my favorite games this year. I love how it looks like Resident Evil, like the old one, but it's very still
modern.
Yeah, modernized, but very dark, murky. Like the atmosphere is great. Like I love it looks the way the realistically still. But I also like it's not fixed camera controls or even tank. It's all the third person view with the thing. So In the game, we actually got scared. I love that. The actual scary parts in it, if you watch the video, it still feels like less bullets in the area, and you only have that gun. It feels like it takes a lot to shoot them. I don't remember that. I felt like if you shoot them in the head, it would kill them right away. This one, it felt like I shot that guy probably like five times.
Two or three times.
Yeah. But it took me a long time.
Do you
think
that it's now precisely to shoot them in the brain?
I don't know. If you watch me play it, I didn't change my control. I think my sensitivity of the aiming was too high. Because my finger was like everywhere on there when I was pushing the joystick. So it got me off guard. So when I do actually play the game, I'll change it. But I like, there's a puzzle element still in there that you have to, you know, get a book and you have to find this and this and this to get that.
It was funny because this is all for all Resident Evil, but it's always weird that you're always in a setting where you have to, this is from like the last Resident Evil where why are these people hiding keys?
Oh yeah, yeah. So Audrey made the exact same thing. Like, why in the police station would they have this underground bunker? But you need like three keys, and each one is separate from each other. Like, what? Why would you do that? It's like, I don't know. That's how Resident Evil get. Like, that will never be explained. Like, they're unless it's like, oh, we've learned like it's a person who designed the whole thing. And in the game you only play Leon in the one shot, so I want to see how Claire's thing, because I remember in the old one where they got separated was a explosion and they got separated, and
Claire mostly not in the police station.
She starts in the streets, goes towards the police station, but whatever you do in Leon's or vice versa, whoever you go first will affect the other one. So if you go in Claire's, if she touched something and you play Leon's, it will affect Leon's gameplay or map a little bit too.
That makes sense.
But I don't believe you can like go back and forth. It's not a game where you have to finish one and then after you finish one, then you play the second one and then you see how the other one changed a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't really play all 30 minutes of it. I just played probably like 10 minutes of it because I had to leave. But I liked everything that you said, like how grim it is. It is really gruesome than the past Resident Evil. Well, except for the last one. What is it called? Resident Evil.
Biohazard for us. Resident Evil 7 Biohazard and flip it in Japan.
It's going to the same vein as that when it comes to how gruesome it is and how horrific everything is.
Yeah,
like you really see a man eaten half his body, like he only has his torso.
And his intestines.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Intestines are everywhere.
He hanged on a little bit, like the little cat poster. Yeah. But we couldn't save it.
It's really cool to see that, and can't wait.
I think you can right now download it still. Yeah. I don't think they'll ever take that off. It doesn't feel like
it. Feels like it's just a demo version of it. But it comes out in a couple of days.
Yeah, yes.
And I think we're gonna talk about it. We're going to be playing it in two different platforms or consoles, so it'll be interesting to see how far you... I'll probably have less time to play it, just because I feel like I'm a little bit more busier, but we'll see how that's going to be. Did you do anything else?
I've been watching The Good Place. Yeah. I won't say anything. It's still good. I encourage people to watch that. It's one of my favorite shows. The last two episodes is a very, like, social conscious type of episodes. They talk about a lot of things that are happening today, and I can't believe
they had Catholic boys.
They're not up to date. Okay. Wait for next week's episode and see what happened. But there are things that are like in the last couple months. All the characters, the way they respond to each other is still good, and the plot still is very different. Like one episode is they're doing this, the next episode is a whole different plot. It's not, doesn't feel stale at all. Any time.
It still feels refreshing.
Yeah, every episode still feels refreshing, and I still don't understand what's happening because last season they only did like 10 or 11 episodes. So this season they came back. So it's still season 3, and we watched 11, believe the 12th episode. So I don't know if they just stop and that's it, or they're still continuing. I don't know if they got picked up and doing more episodes now. I just don't want it to be like a 24 episode season, and then where they drag the plot. That's why I don't like when shows do that.
I mean, the first season wasn't like that.
No. The last two seasons never like that. It was always short. They're like 30 minute, and I think believe 10 or 11 episodes.
Yeah.
But they're beyond 11, 10 episodes already.
I think they're going to go that route, NBC, where it's just going to be a shorter season now for now on. But I think it helps out them it will benefit them in the long run.
Yeah, watch that on NBC, you guys.
Yeah, they even have Brooklyn Nine-Nine on there.
Mm-hmm. So. I haven't watched that in a while. I need to watch
it. I feel like too. If you like The Good Place, you'll like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I did a couple of things. I actually watched something on the Netflix, and I actually watched something live. Which one do you want to hear first?
Well, you watched something live on Netflix?
No, live.
Oh,
like,
oh, in real life. Yeah, yeah. Let's go to Netflix, because that's our sponsor every week.
So tomorrow, the Oscar nominations will get out. So I was going through their shortlist. They revealed their shortlist for Best Documentary a couple months ago, and I want to always like tackle that. Like, oh, I want to see what they have. And one of the things that were available on Netflix is I don't have to like buy or rent this movie is Shirkers, or yeah, Shirkers. It's spelled S-H-I-R-K-E-R-S. It's a film on Netflix. It's written and directed by Sandy Tan. It's a documentary film, and it's about three women breaking into like their cultural expectations in Singapore as independent filmmakers.
So it's a documentary about filmmaking?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And then most of the film is takes place today, and she's actually looking back of this film that they created, Shirkers. They created this film in the late 80s and 90s, and they worked with a man named George Cardona. He was like an impressionist man. Like he was like an intellect and everything. They were really amazed. He was a film teacher in Singapore, and that's how they knew about him. But basically, they were young, but they were rebellious at the time. Like there was this rebellious scene in Singapore. They were very unique. These three women, Sandy, Sophia, and Jasmine. At the time, they were inspired by like the Coen brothers, mm-hmm. David Lynch. Like these are filmmakers that probably you wouldn't, you know, be inspired by when you're that young. So they go out and make this film called Shirkers with George, who was their teacher now, the director of this film. Sandy was the screenwriter and the star of the film. I think Sophia was one of the, I forgot what was she actually, but I know she helped out a lot. And then Jasmine was the editor, one of the editors of the film. But after months of, I think a couple of months of filming this in the early 90s, George said he was going to make this, like edit it and process the film because they were using actual film. Mm-hmm. And then what happened is that he disappeared and he took the film. He went to the States to his wife and never went back. And
what?
Yeah. So the whole mystery is what happened to George, what happened to the film, and it took them over 25 years to reveal what's happening.
Mm-hmm. So you think it might be this one story about the film, but it's actually about fighting George.
Yeah, it's about fighting George and what he did with the film and unraveling these little mysteries about George. Mm-hmm. It's not overall satisfying in the end, but it is kind of like heartbreaking, but it also makes you want to achieve like your goals, because Sandy Tan, the director and writer, that was her film. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a void there where she made this very important film in Singapore and it was never seen ever.
Yeah.
Until now, like I think it was a couple of years ago they put together the film, but the thing is that George also lost the audio recordings.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so she couldn't put anything together. So there's a lot of layers in this film. It's like really intriguing, especially for like the city of Singapore, because we know Singapore as what we see in Crazy Rich Asians.
I haven't watched that.
Okay. It's one of the richest cities in America, in the world.
Yeah, I know.
But
that.
In the early 90s and late 80s, it was still developing. Mm-hmm. But you could tell like in these little time capsules of the film that you can see how this city is going to become this richest city in America, mm-hmm. in the world, not America. But yes, but the film itself, though, the film that within the film, the one that they made in the early 90s,
okay, yes,
it was reminded me of like David Lynch, you know, Twin Peaks.
Really?
Yeah.
That type of film.
It was kind of eerie, but imaginative. They use vibrant colors.
Wait, so you actually watched that film within
the... No, they show pieces of film.
Okay. But no audio, though, right?
No audio, okay. No. And then what was cool is that they got the original composer do some of the music.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah. I don't want to you know, reveal too much of like what happened to George and how what happened to each individual, Sandy, Sophia, and Jasmine. But you do feel like, you know, they lost a part of their lives. Like they lost about 10 years of their lives dedicated to this thing. And it's kind of sad, but also gives you like hope that, you know, Sandy could be like, she's now in her 40s, like going to her 50s, I think. And then like she did that when her when she was 18, 19, early 20s. And she even said that she's like an aspiring filmmaker, but she felt like she did everything backwards. So, but yeah, I encourage everyone who's into filmmaking, but also like good documentaries overall. Like it's a documentary about like fulfilling your purpose. So I really recommend. It's short too, so you don't have to like you know, sit for 2.5 hours, but you can just turn it on. I say go for it because they do a lot of comparison to other films. Because her film was supposed to be this groundbreaking film in Singapore. But what was weird is you see this ripple effect about the films that came after that that took the same visuals.
Oh, wow.
And it's one of those mind-boggling things like, wow, this Wes Anderson had this film later on, like this scene later on in this film in the early 2000s, but she's had it ever
Wait,
since.
Wait, so is that example or are you
That's
seeing...
an example. Oh, okay. You see in the film that Wes Anderson... had in
you're saying that actual Wes Anderson thing,
in his film Rushmore, there's a scene
like
that looks exactly like her scene in her film, but her film never came out, so like it's just weird that she was this genius filmmaker before, but
ahead
it never
of her time,
at her time the things that could happen with her career could have changed dramatically if they released this film,
if George didn't take it.
But I highly recommend that. So that's also on Netflix. I mentioned that before. Another thing I did was I went over to San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland, and I just like did a little getaway with my wife before our time will get more busy this coming year. So we went to SF Sketchfest. Do you know what this
is,
Sean?
Yes, a lot of comedians that I like go to it. We try to go this every year, but we totally forgot. And I'm really intrigued of what you thought about
it. So we didn't know. I knew it was there last week, but I didn't know it was still going on. Because it starts on the 10th.
Yeah, it's a long.
Yeah,
it's almost like 2 weeks. Yeah.
Like 2.5 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
And then we didn't know it was still there when we were there. Then I think I saw someone on Instagram that was there. I was like, whoa, it's still here. And then I bought tickets immediately. The one I bought tickets to is Improv for Humans with Matt Besser. I'm a huge fan of his podcast. Same here, yeah. The panel featured Neil Campbell, who's one of the producers of Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Comedy Bang Bang. Eugene Cardero, you know him in The Good Place. Mm-hmm. He's a pill boy, DJ's best friend. I'm just thinking about like how
and the star of Godzilla.
Mary Holland. She's also a frequent guest of like Comedy Bang Bang and other things. She's more like a chameleon when she's on shows and television shows. And Paul Russ, the new No Nos guys.
Yep, yeah.
And he has this show on Netflix called Love.
Yep. Yeah.
So what was really admirable about all this was that how quick and witty like everyone was. Like you and I listen to like their podcast. Mm-hmm. You always, oh, this is cool that, you know, they're riffing and they come up with words and everything. But for Matt Besser to like ask the audience, like, give us a word. And then the panel will tell a story. And then they play a lot. Improvisation.
They make a scene
out of that story, and it's so cool how they do callbacks. Sorry, I'm not gonna erase this, but callbacks. And then just how like hilarious like their characters and then like the concepts that Matt Besser. There's this one scene, You're probably going to listen to it in a future episode. Like, I think he's going to release this episode. But they just go to different layers of characters where, you know, like, there's these top tier layers where they play, and then they play these minor characters, all of them, and they play minor characters.
Wait, you're confusing me with that. No, like, they don't do that usually. That's why I'm like...
Yeah, that's what I say. Like, this is really cool because it's cool to see it in person, but it's cool to see it like they haven't done it. I think they've done it. They don't do it occasionally in the show, but they do it sometimes where Matt Besser is like, he does a scene setup and it's like usually like, you know, four or five people. And then he'll be like, oh, previously, blah, blah, blah. This
what? Happened. They don't do that.
Yeah, they do like,
In the actual scene?
Yeah, an actual scene. He would do like previously, or he would do something odd where he takes him to a
different scene.
So he does that several times in this one scene, but it's like mind-boggling because they play different characters in each scene.
Oh, each person? Okay.
So they're playing like five different characters in the scene, but they have to like remember which beat they're in, who's doing which character. It's so cool to see that live.
I really hope that comes out as an episode because I want to see that.
You'll love that episode. My wife and I were just like laughing hysterically. She's never listened to Improv for Humans.
Yeah.
So immediately after we left the club, she was like, at first I had no idea what everyone's doing because it sounds like they're just randomly talking because she didn't know that they break it down to a scene.
Yeah.
Because how he says it, he's like, we are now at blah blah blah. I forgot what the exact.
He's like the narrator.
He narrates everything mostly.
So remember in Chicago, we went to an improv like semi show.
Yeah,
and I remember the people we went for.
I didn't go.
Oh yeah, you didn't go. We went with a bachelor. You were part of it, but you couldn't go. And none of them saw improv.
Yeah.
So they were questioning if it's real or not, like the jokes.
Did they ask the audience?
They thought those are plants. I was like, no, this is improv, because these are like, they have to.
Did they not know what the meaning of improv is?
No, I don't think they're used to seeing that. They thought it would be like stand up or a type of show where everything's scripted. Because in the beginning, that show, I forgot the show. It's something about dating and stuff like that. But they did the ask the audience thing, and then people just had wild suggestions, and then that's why we're like, oh, are they planted? I was like, no, this is improv. They have to like play off words and stuff like that. So I hope someday I can see like actual like real
improvisation.
I mean, that was real improvisation, but I never seen like Improv for Humans or other shows like that. So when you tell me this, I was like, it makes me more hype. So the place we're at, they don't usually come here. That's the bad part. They mostly go to
the festivals or whatnot.
Yeah, they mostly go to like
or UCB in LA.
Yeah.
So we enjoyed it. It was really fun. Everyone around us was really great
too. How many people is it? Is it like an intimate room?
It's a club.
Okay.
So it's like Punchline here in Sacramento.
Like 70 or so. 50,
100 people. 100? Okay. Less. Actually, it seems less because it was the middle of the day. And I think there was another podcast doing exactly the same time. I don't know if it was Paul F. Tompkins.
So podcast. The way how does it work? Is it just different clubs everywhere? And
all scattered in Sacramento.
But like, all the known comedians, improvisers all around San Francisco.
Yeah, I think they had one at the New Mission. That's the Alamo Draft House, a place. And then they had one, the theater in Castro. I think it's called Castro Theater. I want to say it's Castro
That's
Theater.
That's cool. Yeah. So we'll probably go there next year.
But yeah, that was Improv for Humans with Matt Besser. I'm pretty sure it's going to come out this coming week. If you're wondering, you won't probably hear us laugh. We didn't do any of the suggestions. But yeah. So anyway, so moving on to our main discussion. This week's main discussion is M. Night Shyamalan's Glass.
May I meet the Beast?
I hope for your sake that he likes you.
That sounds like the bad guys teaming up.
A lot of people are going to die.
Don't do this.
Are you ready?
What do we call you, sir?
First name, Mister. Last name, Glass.
That is a clip from M. Night Shyamalan's Glass. Once again, it's directed and written by M. Night Shyamalan, starring Bruce Willis, Samuel L. Jackson, James McAvoy, Sarah Paulson, and Anya Taylor-Joy. So from IMDb, this is a plot synopsis. Security guard David Dunn uses his supernatural abilities to track Kevin Whedon Crumb, a disturbed man who has 24 personalities. So, as you know, as we said at the top of this podcast, this is a part, the conclusion of M. Night's trilogy, the 177 trilogy, Train trilogy, mm-hmm. Which connects Unbreakable, Split, and this film, Glass. And then, I think you and I are huge fans of M. Night Shyamalan. Mm-hmm. I think we're very huge fans of Unbreakable and Split. I think Split was like his second film of his his reincarnation as a filmmaker.
Yeah. The first one was the one with the kids, right? I totally forgot the name of that. I enjoyed the movie, but
The
Visit.
So after... Yeah. I mean, I think he only has like probably two duds, mm-hmm. but I also enjoy those two duds.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed even the movies that are less
like
critical.
The Last Airbender, I probably like the fighting. Mm-hmm.
I like the representation, representation of all the different clans and stuff.
I like the representation of who he picked as.
There is like one certain clan. I think it was the. So I'm not a huge Airbender fan. Yeah. I don't know the one that. Moves rocks and stones.
I don't know
what they're called. Yeah. Their bending thing.
And then he also directed After Earth, the Will Smith.
Oh yes, yes, yes.
With Jaden Smith.
It's a more intimate movie,
which I liked. It was more. It wasn't like an M. Night Shyamalan's like story mm-hmm. type.
It's
of
his crack at sci-fi, like his first crack of like this broad, big universe of.
It is, thing. Yeah. But and I never watched Devil.
I watched that. The one
is that good?
It's good. It's a character piece. Like each person in the film. It's a question like who did it type of thing.
Yeah.
And I thought the ending was satisfying.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that's the only film in his filmography he didn't direct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, written it.
He written and produced it, but he didn't direct it. But yeah. So that's not all his films, but we're not going to go through each one. So John, knowing that you're a huge fan, what's your thoughts about Glass?
I liked it. I liked the conclusion of this trilogy. It is...
Oh, do you want to say there's no spoilers?
Okay, yeah. So if you're expecting like this huge blockbuster film of like what you see in Avengers or in DC movies or Marvel movies, it is not that. It's a very... grounded series, you could say. I like all the characters and all of them. They do the thing where they showcase each one and how they are tangled in this like connection of this universe, and I liked it. They think Sarah Paulson is really good in this movie. I'm glad she's in this movie. She brings this like I don't know. This is like this force in this movie that it needed, like this energy. Like it's because you know how James McAvoy and Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson are in these actors.
I feel like she gives a balance.
Yes, it's balance to all these characters. But the way they show she's like a therapist in this movie that's trying to help them, and then her ways of helping them is very different from each one, and it's interesting to how she breaks down of each. Why do they think they're superheroes? Are they superheroes? We don't know. Like, or do they actually have these powers, or is it something else? So that's kind of cool. I like how, and then the way they how Samuel Jackson plays in this broader movie is kind of cool. Like, it gives that villain his villain character this cool story that, you know, you kind of see him in Unbreakable a little bit, how he plays Bruce Willis, but in this larger, more like all these other characters, it's kind of cool. Like, you see him as this cool, memorable villain, like you see Magneto and stuff like that. So I always thought that was cool. The story is good. It's nothing like too
groundbreaking.
Not groundbreaking. It's a typical.
I have a rebuttal to that later.
Okay. But yeah. It's to me it's a typical superhero story, but there it's a character piece for each one too. Like it's different from like it still has a good versus bad, but it's still it's just different. It felt like very different. And there are those side characters. I forget who are they. Like the actors. I didn't.
You know, that's his son in the original film.
So. I did not. I was questioning that kind of because his he kind of looks like him when they do the flashbacks to him. I was like, oh, is that him? Because typical more movies. Some movies will get
the actor older talking about is Spencer Trent Clark.
Yes, so he's back again. Who
plays Joseph Dunn, the son of.
But yeah, I was surprised he was in there, and they show what's her name, Anya Taylor.
Yeah.
From Split in there too, and then it shows the mother of Glass and. I forget who plays the mother in Glass.
Oh, that's Charlene Woodward.
Yes, yeah, so she's in there.
Which is she in Twitter? People just found out she's five in real life. She's only 5 years younger than Samuel Jackson.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Are you serious? Yeah, younger?
Yeah, younger.
What? I did. What type of makeup does she have in that movie then?
Well, but she did look younger in this film than for me. She looked younger than Samuel Jackson.
I don't know. I have to rewatch it again. But I really enjoyed the film. The last half of it, it's not like a twist. I mean, he's known to do that, but I think it's a satisfying conclusion to it. And I kind of wish there's more films. I know he said this is like the last of the trilogy. He's kind of like done with it. Like this is how he wants to end it and that's it. But after that, couple last 10 minutes of this movie, I'm like, I want to know more. Like I hope there's like at least a comic book, make it more, if they want to go that route. Yeah, release the 177 train anthology or something like that, because I really want to see what these other characters are about too. And yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I don't know what else to say. This
of M. Night Shyamalan's role.
He's very goofy, and then especially in that scene, it's the way he
directs himself.
Not direct, but the way he acts is just like
you can tell he's not.
We're way putting awkward, like the camera's just focused on him, and his
eyes,
facial movement, his eyes are like, oh man, this is really bad.
It looks unnatural.
Yeah.
It's funny. Funny. Oh, okay. And, I guess.
So I like how the movie is funny. When they show certain characters, like James McAvoy character. So in Split, he plays 24 characters, but you get to see a lot of them. But you specifically see the little boy again.
Hedwig
again, and et cetera. Yeah. Like that joke from the Split, it carries on, and I like that he's still there. I think James McAvoy carries this film. Like without him, this film will be just unbreakable, and that's it. Like what's his name? Samuel Jackson and Bruce Willis just plays it straight, kind of, to me. It's like they're just playing themselves in this weird way. Bruce Willis didn't really do anything for me. Like he's just there. Like I get his character and things, but he just played it like Bruce Willis would ever play it. My only gripe is really bad. They're all professional actors. I know that they're really good, but I felt the Spencer, the one who plays the son, Spencer, the one that came back. Yeah. I don't know if he has any acting jobs before this, and maybe I don't know. But the way he acts, it really threw me off. It felt like it was just like winging it basically for him, and that's the only my minor gripe of the film is that's just his acting.
He's been to other films. I just noticed it's mostly he's one of the stars of Animal Kingdom.
I do not even know what is that.
It's the
is that American, TNT?
Yeah, it's American remake of the Australian.
Oh, okay, film. Yeah, and they're making a TV show of it, or it probably is out.
Yeah, it's out already. Okay. Yeah. It's been out for like 3 years.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you're a huge, if you want to see the conclusion, I think it's well worth it. And then it really ties everything nicely in this movie.
So yeah, I was just going to piggyback on that. Yeah, like I love this film. I love how like it subverts your expectations when it comes to M. Night films. The one I was going to say rebuttal because of the story, it reminds me of The Last Jedi, where you have these like, I remember before this film came out, everyone had these theories like, oh, Anya Taylor-Joy's character is going to be the sidekick of the Beast. And they're going to make like the X-Men, like this is going to be like this huge thing. But no, it's this quiet film. And then it's basically deconstructs nice films of Unbreakable and Split. You're like, well, this is a film about whether these were, do we, we're questioning their existence. Like, we're not questioning if they, like the film, but we're questioning, like, do they really have superpowers? Like, is the audience being played right now?
Yes.
And I think I love that. Like, that's how The Last Jedi to me was. Like, are Jedi's necessary? Like, that's what the question was. Or, not only that, but do we have to have a lineage to be a Jedi? And this one felt like, do you have to be someone to be the superhero? And I mean, they'll probably, like, reveal it in the end, but that's up to, you know, the people who watch this. But I had these like feelings of like when I watched The Last Jedi, like how everything looked beautiful, like the music was great, the cinematography was great. You could hear the slight like nod to Superman's
Man of Steel. You mentioned that, So after the movie, I even mentioned that to Audrey. Like, I love when every time they show Bruce Willis, it plays a
Man of Steel type of the Zack Snyder one score. But it's not that particularly. But you can tell they're trying to copy.
And then every time they show Glass, I don't know if Split had one. If not Split, James McAvoy character. I don't know if he had a theme in the movie, a song. Yeah. But I didn't really catch.
But I think the dialogue plays a huge role here, where you have to listen and then see what's happening, like the action they're doing. But there's like this scene when Mr. Glass, Samuel Jackson's character, is talking to one of the nurses that's taking care of him. But it's just a silhouette of his hair and his body in the wheelchair. And I'm like, that's a really good scene, because you know how that is conveyed to the audience. Like, we know who he is and he's mysterious. Like, we don't need to see his face. But everything he's saying, you just listen to what he's saying. Yep, and I was like, that's really cool. And then all the dynamics of the characters, the chemistry among like James McAvoy's character, Samuel Jackson's character, like how like this, it's shown in the trailer where he's like, and this is the part where the villains work together.
It's like, kind of cheesy. Yeah. Like a lot of the dialogue is cheesy.
The dialogue reminds me of like comic book cheesiness.
Yeah, Glass was like that. Samuel Jackson, Unbreakable Glass character was like that. He quotes a lot of... like what you typically hear in this comic book. And there is a little bit, it's not like a spoiler, but there's a bit where Bruce Willis' character and his son, and they always have he's, you know, patrolling the streets and helping people, but every time he finds like a burglar or a thug or something like that out, they say something to him, like a catchphrase, and then the son will write it down.
Yeah.
It's all these cheesy catchphrases that actual, you know, bad people say to Bruce Willis. It's like, oh, it's like a comic book. Why would they even say that? It's such a cheesy thing.
Yeah. And it's really cool. And they do a little nod to like Superman, but they don't say his name. Where like, what's the first superhero comic that was like really prolific to everyone? I was like, that was a kind of cool. And I just like how what they did with the characters, with Anya Taylor-Joy's character and what's his name? Joseph. I'm trying to get their names right now.
And Mrs. Price.
Yeah, Mrs. Price. Casey. Her name's Casey. Anya Taylor-Joy's character. So Casey, Joseph, and Mrs. Price. What they are involved with, and how they are used in this film. I thought that was a really cool idea from M. Night. And then I think the overall, like, what the message is really cool. Like, I'm not going to say what it is, but, like, just seeing that. And then it reminded me when the Avengers came out, you have all these, like, six films across the board. Like, Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, Thor, Captain America. Was there another one?
That's it. It's just those four. It's four leading up, yeah.
So, like, you know, this one, it's more reduced. You have two films that lead up to Glass.
Yeah.
But I felt the same feeling for, like, the last 20 minutes. Like, oh, wow, he did it. Like, he concluded something that was satisfying to me, but also could open up to many other ideas this world. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I really love the film. Right now, it's one of my favorite films this year. I only watch one film. But yeah, it's amazing that he did this. And then, yeah, I want to see him do something else now. Because mm-hmm. I think this is over. I think he's been trying to write this for 20 years. So let's see what he could do with another genre. I don't want to say like he's back. I think he's always been here. Mm-hmm. But he just has ups and downs. Like every other
director.
Like when we talk about Steven Spielberg, we always talk about like Jurassic Park.
Indiana but we never said mention what Ready Player One.
Yeah. Or his other what do you call it? Like,
but see, like those films, I also enjoy too. Like Ready Player One, it has like its.
Well, flaws. Have you watched BFG?
No, no, no.
See, so.
But wait, the giant one.
I
watch a giant film, but I don't know what I watch. It has a Beast from X-Men as... Is that BFG?
No. The other thing I liked is the cinematography. Like I said, from Mike Gielakis. But there's these color palettes he uses to identify each character. And you don't notice it throughout the film until you're like really noticing it. Like, whoa, these colors show up when Bruce Willis is around. Mm-hmm. These colors show up when Samuel Jackson.
But don't you ever notice it's also connected to the other character?
Yeah,
like each character has its own little color palette that's connected to the other three.
Yeah.
Like, it was the scene, the last like couple of scenes, I was like, oh, all these like cool nods to those type of look.
But so that's it for Glass. If you want to know other opinions about the film, I recommend two articles. They're both not opposites, but they're both really
they're tackling their own opinion.
They're tackling the film, but also like just where what they think matters to them, like their opinions basically. But it's one's on The Hollywood Reporter. It's by Joelle Monique. It's the title is How the Unbreakable Truly Became a Toxic Version of the American Dream. And then the other one's from slashfilm.com from Britt Hayes. And her article is called The Unpopular Opinion: Glass is a Bold and Brilliant Climax to M. Night Shyamalan's Superhero Trilogy. I recommend reading those if you want just more opinions about it. I think it's one of these decisive films where people will have polar opposites. Like this, you know, the spectrum will be either you hate this film, you love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be in the middle. That's why I think it reminds me of The Last Jedi. That's why I think it's important. And then once again, also James McAvoy, I feel like he needs to be nominated
for something.
This thing is like the way he just did everything. I was like, well, this is really incredible. Like he is like someone we tend to like not. We overlook sometimes, but he's just incredible. Like, knowing this is like his second film superhero franchise, it's so weird that this is what I'm going to remember him by, not the Professor X.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. And he also has played the Beast. But so is there any other...
Who plays the Beast?
His one of his personalities.
Oh, okay. I was like, what are you talking about? That one dude.
Do you have anything else to say?
No. That's it.
But yeah, so that's Glass. It's out today. John, where can they find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at the most organized Twitter feed of 20XX at AbayaArt. And go subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can check me out there. Videos dropping for our date night feature with my Audrey, in which we play games while the kids are asleep because that's our free time. And tomorrow's video is a game we played called what was the name? Oh, Pet the Pup at the Party. Just go check that out.
Weird.
Yeah, just go check that out. It's like say 30 minutes and like I said, subscribe to that. We need 100 to get the URL. I'm trying to get the URL for the freaking awesome.
You can find me at Benjamin Abaya on Instagram and Twitter. You can find all our episodes at thefreakingawesome.com. You could like and subscribe us. Please make a comment on our iTunes feed. The more comments, the more we're going to go up there.
Expose ourselves. That's not the word.
But basically, we're trying to get 100 listeners this year. Please help us. If you follow us on Twitter, it's TFA Now. And then on the Facebook,
it's just The Freaking Awesome.
It's The Freaking Awesome. I think we post most of our stuff there too. But if you want to contact us, it's contacts. Is it with an S?
Yes, it's S.
At thefreakingawesome.com. Once again, it's contacts at thefreakingawesome.com. We also like to listen to like your recommendations or what your thoughts about these films or whatever we're reviewing this week. But yeah, so I'm thinking that we're going to probably have a couple of guests when it comes to the Resident Evil episode. I was trying to get a guest this episode, mm-hmm. but I couldn't. But we'll try to get more guests so you don't always listen to our voices. But if you enjoy our voices, just keep on listening. But yeah, that's it for now. Thank you for listening. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
And this has been the Freaking Awesome Podcast.